Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Eastern family, and welcome to tonight's program. We're coming to you live, as we do every Monday at this time. Thanks for listening and being part of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. It's always great talking about the Eastern family, both old and new. Remember, you can always listen to the radio show on your computer by going to www.ealradioshow.com, or even more direct connection at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. That's a forward slash. Our sponsor's website, www.repaonline.com, also carries the icon connection. Of course, this is the retired Eastern Pilots Association website. The other way is to just call into the radio show's live online phone number, 213-816-1611. This will put you right into the queue with other callers. You may even want to join the conversation or ask the host or guest a question. We encourage you to add to our show by joining us live and on the air. It's always fun to do a show like tonight's show, where we can talk with former Eastern family members. It's an Eastern Airlines show talking to Eastern Airlines people. We'll introduce our guests right after we get flight number 292 into the air. Dorothy.
Well, we seem to have lost Dorothy. So I'll be the senior flight attendant tonight on flight 294. Flight attendants, prepare for departure, please. Captain, we've completed the cabin departure announcements and we're secure for departure.
Thanks, Neil. Don, will you let the tower know that we're ready for takeoff?
Well, I guess we lost Don and
Dorothy. Dorothy, yep.
Don't know why, but sure I will. Miami Tower, Eastern 294 is ready for takeoff anytime.
Roger, Eastern 294. The winds are from the west at 5 knots. You're cleared for takeoff on runway 27 left.
Roger, Miami, Eastern 294. We're runway 27 left, and we're on the roll.
As the day goes by, feel yourself in it. It's a good day to up and fly away. It's so easy to do. Easton's got the right time.
Well, having some technical difficulties tonight. Dorothy and Don, are you back with us? Well, since they're not communicating, Chuck, do you hear us?
Yeah, Chuck,
Steve
right
is
here.
Still here.
Steve, you're still with us? Who else
yes.
can identify themselves out there?
Jim is here.
Okay.
We got to gear up, and we're climbing through 18,000.
Well, we really don't have a skit or anything prepared. It's really an open conversation. And I don't know what happened down in area code 561, but you seem to have lost your communications capability. And if you can figure that out, please rejoin our broadcast. But we'd like to remember Veterans Day, which we recently celebrated just a couple of days ago, and thinking about the veterans that have served over the years protecting our freedom and our liberty, and those that have lost their lives and severely handicapped in some cases, and they need to be recognized more than just this one day. And, of course, we do, those that we know personally. And I saw a video the other day on the Internet that, and perhaps you guys did too, at an airport terminal. It didn't say which terminal that this happened, but they had a group of, I think there were about 10 folks from branch of service, and they were in their working uniforms, and they were roundly applauded as they passed through the terminal. People turned and faced them, and some saluted, but they all applauded all through that terminal. And did any of you guys see that video?
I did not.
I wish I had saved it, but it was really good. And these folks were just not expecting the reception that they were given at this particular terminal, airport terminal. And it really, I think. Hey, we hear somebody out there, and don't know who it is. Is that you, Don or Dorothy?
Hey, Neil, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, we can hear you now. Yes, Don, what happened?
We've got a problem with our phones here, so I'm on my cell.
Okay. Well,
I can hardly hear you.
Well, yeah, it must be your communications. Very sorry that this has happened. I had the pleasure of being in Don and Dorothy's home yesterday. And they treated Emery and I to a wonderful lunch. We had gone down to participate in the picnic that was conducted at the C.B. Smith Park in Broward County. I think that's in Davie, Hollywood area. And they had a good crowd there. It was the EARA annual picnic. So we traveled down and attended that and had the pleasure of meeting some wonderful people. And Ed Slane was there. Ed was at our reunion. And we got to talk with him. As a matter of fact, we had dinner with Ed. And it was really a great time that we shared our stories at his house. And then we, the next day coming home yesterday, we stopped by Don and Dorothy's home, beautiful home, there in the Boynton Beach area. And boy, did she put on a spread, and her wonderful cooking. And
Neil, was Vito at the picnic?
Yes, he was. Vito. And
yep.
Michael Zoll was there, and a number of the EARA officers.
Good.
Don, can you, I don't know whether you can let Dorothy share your cell phone. And maybe she could.
I think they're off again, Neil.
Okay. All right, yeah. But it was really a lot of fun, and we came on home, so it was a long day yesterday. But it was a great picnic. They auctioned off many, many different prizes. I think Dorothy and our Don won the ticket for a trip, round trip for two on Frontier Airlines. I think that's his fourth round trip winning that he's done. I think he won a couple of them at the reunion in September. And so I don't know when he and Dorothy plan to use all these tickets that they got or the passes that they got. But and there was a 50-50 split, and it was a good time, a lot of fun. So anything else you guys want to share on about Veterans Day, perhaps remembering someone that you knew very close?
This is Chuck.
Chuck, go ahead, you first, and then Steve.
Here at the Villages, every year, since we have a lot of veterans from all five of the services, they have a memorial park here. And it's got a sculptured monolith with an eagle on top, and a very nice area with paver bricks, you know, like they put on your driveway. And you can call them up, and either you or your family donates X amount of money. It's not very much. And they will engrave a paver brick in your name. And then at this time of the year, they let you know that it's time for you to come and be part of the celebration of your brick being put into this large area around this monolith statue with the eagle on top, next to a flagpole, obviously, and mine came due. So I went, and we were there for about almost 2 hours, and I looked up my paver brick. It's number 70,750. We have actually 80,000 paver bricks with service people who are either gone on or still in the villages. And then we have different ceremonies from different branches of the service, and then the VFW is there, and the VA, and some of the legions there, American Legion, and all the other services and community services are there. We had two bands. One was an actual marching band, and the other one was a drum and bugle. And then we had a small band that they had a drum and with bagpipes, Irish. And that was really nice. And then they do parades in this area where the paver bricks are, and everybody brings your own chair, and you sit out on the lawn and watch everything that's going on, and they tell you about the new bricks, which obviously was mine was one of them. And told us approximately where they were located. I'd gone a couple of days before and found mine because it is a daunting task to go through 70,000 bricks trying to find your own. But it was really nice. They had a 21-gun salute with real blanks, I guess you might say. We had seven guys there. And that was nice. And it was, all in all, I really appreciated what the military and the village, owners of the villages do for the veterans here. So we had a great little ceremony for a couple hours, and then a couple of us went off to eat lunch. So that was my Veterans Day. Go ahead, Steve, what was you going to talk about?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Veterans Day is celebrated on my wife's birthday, my wife Glenda's birthday.
Steve, I happened to see the beautiful picture of Glenda that was shared. And, wow, I can understand why you quickly married up with her. Wow, what a beautiful lady. She still is a beautiful lady.
Thank you, Neil.
That isn't the question, Neil, is what we want to know is, how did he end up with such a nice?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, Miami Tower.
You're cleared to land, Don.
Left me off the airplane, but I fell in the
airway, sick,
but I'm
Don?
Back on. Can you come back and pick me up?
Yeah, that's all right, as long as Dorothy's with us.
Yeah, we are with you. We got lost there for a little bit, but we're back online again.
Well,
we're not quite sure what happened.
I shared the fact that you treated us to a wonderful lunch yesterday, and I did look and see that flag, folded flag, of your father, I believe, in your display unit there in your office, and the beautiful. Just can you tell a little bit about that, because I think you wanted to share something about Veterans Day with us tonight too.
Well, my dad was in World War One, and he was at Chateau Thierry, so he was given the Legion of Medal Honor by the French ambassador of Miami. He was authorized by the French ambassador in France, and they arranged to do that, and we had them go up to the Veterans Hospital up in West Palm Beach, and they had a ceremony there, and they presented my father with the medal, and they gave him the flag that was presented. I actually flew over the White House the day that my father got his, at 102, I think it was, he got his Purple Heart. After all these years, I finally was able to go through the veterans and call and go all through that sort of email and all of that, and finally got him awarded with the not only the Purple Heart and the French Medal of Honor, but he also got the gold medal. And he had his name in the paper, and he was on television, and he has a book written about him. So he really was terrific. He told Don and I that when he was in Chateau Thierry, they were starving for food, and that there was this river located where they were banked, and he swam across the river and stole into the German camp and got food and brought it back for the people to eat. So he was very innovative that way to be able to do that. But he used to be a lifeguard when he was in Italy as a young boy, so I'm not surprised that he did something like that. But he relayed quite a few stories about when he was walking beside the jeeps that they had, and they were in war, and they were being bombed, and they had all kinds of things exploding around them. And he got hurt twice. He got a big scar all the way down on his arm, and all the way from the top of his groin all the way down his leg to his knee. So he took a lot of hits and was back out in the line several times. So he was a real hero in our books and many others too. So back to you, Neil.
Well, I can tell our folks that Dorothy does a magnificent job. Dorothy, you're truly an artist, not in painting pictures, but in I didn't see any pictures on your wall that you showed me. But, wow, the books that you have turned out, the scrapbooks, the cookbooks, I just couldn't believe the quality of work that I saw, and I wanted to buy them and just take them out of your house. But, of course, I think they were one of a kind until you published some of them. But it's just absolutely they're beautiful, and I'm sure when you're publishing it and we're able to talk about it on the Internet, folks, you've got to get a copy of these things. Dorothy does a beautiful job, and EARA should count their blessings in having you, Dorothy, as the editor of that newspaper kit.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Neil. It's something that I love to do, and you do put a lot of time and a lot of work and effort into something like that. I have done quite a bit on projects that way, a great family history for both my family and for my mother's side and my father's side, and I did it for Don's family on both of his sides. So someday we hope to get to Canada to actually visit with Don's area that his mother and father came from. Like we did down in Italy to my mother and father. We went to Gaeta, and we went to where my father comes from in Vieste in Foggia, and it was just beautiful, and it was nice to do that sort of thing. It's something that we'll always have and that I can pass down with my relatives. So it was great, and thank you so much for mentioning it.
Well, let's see. Let me go over to Bill Joseph. You're still with us, Bill. Anything happen in your area? And thank you so much for the great emails that you send out from time to time. I enjoy reading them.
Neil, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Bill.
Well, I've got breaking news that you'll only find on the Eastern Airlines radio show. The first brand-new 737-800 from Boeing will arrive in Miami at 8:25 this evening. It is in route. That's the airplane that was just manufactured by Boeing, left there at 12:22 this afternoon Pacific Standard Time, and is en route just crossing the border from Alabama into Florida and will be arriving in Miami at 8:25.
That's great.
That is just wonderful.
And you heard it on the Eastern Airlines radio show. And, Bill Joseph, you don't reveal your sources, do you?
Absolutely not.
Very good work.
Neil, this is Jim.
Yes, Jim.
We had a very, very well-attended Veterans Memorial Service, and I was privileged to, as I'm chaplain of my American Legion post. I've been a member of the American Legion for 59 years, and after my invocation, a gentleman walked up to me. I had mentioned that I was a naval aviator during the Korean conflict. And he came over and he said, "My goodness." He said, "I was in the Korean conflict as well." He said, "What kind of airplane did you have?" I said, "It was a P-2V Neptune patrol bomber. We did anti-submarine warfare work." "Oh, my goodness," he said, "I was in a P-2V myself." He said, "What did you do?" I said, "I was an aviation electrician and electronics guy running the MAD gear, magnetic airborne detection." He said, "Holy smokes, I was doing the same thing." He was on the west coast of the United States when I came back over here on the east coast. And do you know he lives less than 1 mile from me here?
Wow.
I'm telling you, it was wonderful. I'm going to be in touch with him in the next few days.
Oh, I'm sure you will be. Yeah. That's great. That's great.
Incredible.
Well,
it's nice to hear stories like that.
It's a small world.
Yeah, it is. I've got some other 954. What area code? That's Fort Lauderdale, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Broward County.
Broward County. I've got the 954. Would you like to tell us who you are? 954-434-14. Well, if you'd like to share any comment with us, please do so at any time. Just break in on our conversation. And we're just talking Eastern talk. And, you know, in the home of Ed Slane, Captain Ed Slane, I learned some things about Ed I didn't know. I haven't known him that long, I guess maybe a couple or 3 years. And he's the one that introduced Bob Wilbur at the reunion and told us about Bob Wilbur. And when he was honored there in September. So we went to his home and we chatted and, of course, talking about our piloting days. But Ed's a fascinating person. He really is. He was a U-2 pilot, and I tried to get some information about those U-2s, and he said, you know, he swore to secrecy because he was in the, what do you have to have, clearance or something like that when you fly that type of airplane? And I guess you're bound to that secrecy or confidentiality or forever. And I said, well, the thing I wanted to know about the airplane is how high did you ever fly? He said, that's confidential information. But he said, I can tell you that it was above 70,000 feet. That's higher than I've never been that high, for sure. Except with a few martinis, I've been that high.
They have a top ceiling of 81,000 feet.
81. Well, he wouldn't tell me that, so you told. So he didn't have to tell.
Go on the internet and find all about it.
Yeah, but very fascinating.
They have some terrific cameras on those airplanes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They did. And of course, Gary Powers was in a few classes before him, but it was interesting conversation that we had that night.
Did he
so
say how long he was in being a U-2 airplane pilot?
I think most of his time. He flew other airplanes. I think he flew fighters, but that was the one that he was pretty proud to have flown that for enough. He didn't tell me how many hours he had in it either. Of course, I like the Blackbird. That was my favorite airplane of all time, period. I think it was one of the greatest airplanes ever built, the SR-71. And
my favorite airplane was the DC-3, so I don't take second fiddle to anybody.
Okay, well, I'll do one
you're
better than
Godfrey.
That. I'll do one better than that. Mine's the J-3 Cub.
I like the Super Connie.
The
Super Connie was mine.
The Super
G. Well, I have a picture of it. Arthur Godfrey and the Wings of Manning that Roland Moore and DeVito Borelli.
Yes. Dorothy, 858, I've got an area code here. Is that you?
Yeah, hi, this is Jake from Long Beach.
Don.
Jake from Long Beach. Tell us about yourself, Jake. We haven't heard from you, I don't believe, in the past, so tell us what your name is.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller. Just really excited. Everyone's very fired up about the election. I feel like every radio station I listen to is just so focused on Donald Trump. And I mean, who's not to blame? Everything around him is just on fire. He's exploding. His wife and daughter are fucking sexy. I mean, I would put my penis in their vaginas all night.
Oh, my God. Oh, boy. Well, we do have what we call a cut off here.
Hit him with the hive.
You know, I am I'm not surprised at the generation that we have now. It seems like these folks want to come in, and I guess Howard Stern had his problems back, with callers. It was It was, what's his name that was on for so many years on CNN, the old-timer that had...
Larry King,
and every time Larry King had a show, he'd get a wise person, low-intelligent person like the one we just had call. You know, in 5 years, that's the first call that we've had like that. The very first call.
That's the first one I ever heard.
And
It's
really sad.
You've been lucky
that
you haven't got him, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's really sad. And by the way, I was going to cut him off, and the guy is so coward that he took himself off the air. He just wanted to make that statement to show how smart he was.
Now that shows how good he is.
He needs a tune-up.
Yeah, I'm always one.
That's incredible, yeah. Well, we're old folks, and we've been through a lot, and we can take things like that. But that's one thing I don't like to do is get into a discussion of politics and or religion, because we have so many different opinions, and so it's really not good to bring up things like that in the show.
Doesn't make for a fun evening.
No,
yeah.
But...
No.
Nope.
That's what we're here
for. Yeah.
Right, we're
yeah.
here to have... Yeah, right. Exactly. And today being Veterans Day, we're here to honor our... this weekend being Veterans Day, we want to honor the veterans and not have nonsense like that.
Just to digress a little bit, you know, this thing with Ed... It's the biggest secret I've ever heard in the aviation industry, almost. I've looked all over the net into other magazines and everything,
mm-hmm.
and it just gives you basically what we heard a little show. And nobody knows exactly what happened.
You're talking about Ed Wiggle?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just because I'm a big fan of Ed. That you know, we all are. And
I looked and I saw in my little black book Ed's secret phone number, and I've got it. And I thought, well, I'd like to call that and just express our gratitude for he being on our show along with he and Susan. And been being at our reunion a couple of times, and I just decided that no, I want to respect his privacy and not do that. And but at any rate, do we have any callers we haven't talked with?
I thought Arthur Godfrey was on here.
Arthur Godfrey used to be down where I was at the Miami Beach at the Kenilworth Hotel.
Yeah, we had an ETC hotel right next door, which was the Ivanhoe. We did a tremendous business there.
Area code 305. Is that Dottie?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I kept hearing that background lovely voice.
You hear me giggling? You hear me laughing?
No, I didn't hear that. How was your weekend?
It was great. It was so wonderful to honor the veterans.
And how did you see any particular parade or celebration about it?
No, not in particular, but I watched all the shows and talked to people, and my father was also a veteran.
Oh, nice.
Wonderful. You know, our neighborhood. Yeah, we're in an adult community, and on Veterans Day and July 4th and Memorial Day, they put out flags, American flags, down
yes.
our entrance driveway, which is all the way through. Basically, it's a boulevard through our subdivision, and they are, I guess, they're about maybe 15 yards apart, and all the flags, they are kind of. Angled so that it would form an arc over the highway, and it's just such a beautiful drive through there. And it's wonderful. And Chuck, like your subdivision, the villages, we too have bricks that we honor, and usually the funds are given to those veterans in our subdivision that we recognize. So it's great. This country
yeah,
does
it's really nice.
It. I wish everybody could see that. Go ahead, Dorothy.
At the picnic on Saturday, they stopped everything that we were doing, remember, and they had all of the servicemen or women that were there stand, and everybody gave them an honor, so that was really nice, too, to be
fantastic.
Remembered.
Yes, yes.
Area code 904, do I have, is that you, let's see, Reg, you're not on the air with me tonight, are you, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Wow. Man, fantastic. I'm glad you showed up tonight. I wasn't expecting it, but you're in the same area code I'm broadcasting from. So it's nice to have you on our show tonight. I'm glad you tuned in because we want to hear more from you in the future. Folks, I've got on the line now a fellow that I just met just recently. A good friend of mine, Howard Mucci, who is sometimes on our show from time to time, and he introduced me to Reggie Hanlon. Did I get the right name, the last name, Reggie?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
Good old Irish name.
Yeah, and we got on the phone, and golly, we must have did about 45 minutes of ear bending, and Reggie was an air traffic controller down in Miami for many years, and fascinating stories, and so we want to have a real traffic controller on our show from time to time, and Reggie, you're welcome to be on our show. Can you just give us a little brief background about so you can I can introduce you to our host?
All right. Yeah, I started my aviation career, I guess, in high school. I started flying the 152s out at American Aviation at Tamiami. I guess it was the old Tamiami Airport now.
Uh-huh.
And then I later started flying at Burnside Ott, going to college and flying out there at the Opa-locka Airport. And I got my private and the commercial and the CFI and the multi-engine instrument. And during that time period, I ran into a couple of guys that were controllers, and they said, you ought to apply. And so in late 69, I got hired on by the by Miami Center. And I worked there from up until 1983, right after the PACO strike, which is in the 81. 83, I moved up to Jacksonville Center and worked there until I retired in 05. Or 05, as we say in aviation, right?
Right.
And, so I'm proud of the fact that I had 36 years on the boards with no deals, no recorded deals, I should say.
No recorded. Well, we're going to do a skit on one of your recorded deals. I want to put together something that I've been telling some other folks. I hope you don't mind. I didn't use your name, Reggie. So it could have been anybody.
Okay.
But you told me a story there at the very end that I found fascinating, and I want to kind of work a little skit around that in one of our future broadcasts. And if you'll participate in that with us, it might be as early as next week, next Monday. But
yep,
it was really fascinating what Reggie told me, folks, and I'm a firm believer And the experience that he had. He asked me just a simple question, and I think I told you, yes, I did believe in that. And so we've had some shows in the past about this, but I think your experience lends a lot more credibility to what others have said and their thoughts about this. So we're going to keep our listening audience in suspense about what we're talking about, Reggie. Okay?
That sounds good. That sounds good. Hey, one of the guys on there was a U2 pilot. I came in kind of late there.
Was a
U2 pilot on there?
Well, I had one of my real good friends down in Fort Lauderdale invited me into his home day before or night before last, and we talked, and he's a U2 pilot. He's down in Fort Lauderdale, so I just saw him over the weekend. Did you have any questions that you would have for him?
No, I may even talk to him. The U2s I worked, the first one I worked was in Miami Center, and I remember they passed through 60,000, and you don't know what altitude they're at after that. It's classified, and we didn't even what we were working. We tried to get the altitudes. And it's never see U2s at the same time, never, except for one time in my career, and that was up in up around between Tallahassee and Birmingham. We had a couple of U2s up there.
Well,
he did tell me.
Go ahead, Reggie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had a trainee at the time, and I told her when the first one came on there, I said, the first U2, I said, that's the only plane you don't have to worry about. He's going to be above everything, so don't worry about him. and then we got a handoff on another one that was coming from Birmingham headed down south. And so now here's the situation. I got two of them, and they're kind of going to become close to each other. So they wouldn't tell you the altitude. It was all classified. And so they keep the coded things, whatever it was. It's like you'd ask the altitude. He says green 4. Another one says blue 8. And they got a guy at the center. He runs over to a safe, unlocks the safe, and gives you an altitude. But we couldn't get the safe open in time. So I put it on the pilots. I said, what's your altitude? And he said, whatever it was, blue 4. And the other one said, I'm green 3. And I said, does that work out for you two guys? Is that okay? And they said, yep. So they kind of merged a little bit and then passed. But, I never know how close they were, but they were above 60.
It wasn't a mock airplane. It wasn't a supersonic airplane. It was just, I think he said they flew 0.85 Mach. And heck, that's 10-11 speed.
Well, the SR-71s we used to work out of MacDill, they were the ones that they really go fast. The SR-71.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did tell me that was the most unstable airplane he ever flew.
What, the 71?
No, the
U2.
U2.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, U2. Very unstable platform.
Yeah, I guess the thin air and the wings were kind of long, I guess. I worked an SR-71 and they had that porpoise maneuver when they're trying to get up to their speed up to go, and they dive down and they say they're passing through 25,000 going up. The thing is, they dive down again. I remember one time I had one. I was, what's your altitude? He said, I'm passing 28. So I was happy with the aircraft underneath him. He's above him now. But I didn't find out until later, asking him, what's your altitude now? He says, I'm passing 25 going up. It's 25. And I found out they do a porpoise maneuver to get up to altitude.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I've never heard of that.
Wow.
Some of the planes out of MacDill did the same thing when they wanted to go supersonic out of MacDill. They do the same thing. They dive down and then they come back up to get the high speed, I guess it was, and then dive down to get supersonic or whatever.
Airplanes.
Say what?
I said that I heard that they do that in some of the fighter planes.
Yeah. Out of MacDill, they do that porpoise maneuver also, yeah. So, but we'd had them out of MacDill. We just kind of aiming for – you all remember that warning area if your pilot's 470? Warning area 470 off Tallahassee?
Yeah, sure do. I've been over to Pensacola area. I used to fly there a little bit.
So So when you get to 470, you do what?
Well, that's what we'd send him out of MacDill. We'd aim him towards that warning area 470 because it's kind of restricted airspace. We put him out there, and they do their maneuver, then come back into MacDill. So
that's one of the largest restricted airspaces in the country, isn't it?
Right in that area, yeah. You got the Eglin Air Force Base has a warning area underneath them, and then Pensacola had one. And what's their Panama City? Tyndall Air Force Base. They had their force. That was 470 for them.
That's 470, I used to fly little airplanes through that area, in that area, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Well, that's
now,
bringing back some memories.
Did you remember the controller jokes about the altitude?
What's the controller joke?
The guy wants to know his airspeed. He's flying a 150. He says, I'm doing 85. And some guy says, I'm in a twin. I'm doing 120. And then a fighter plane comes along, and then I'm so-and-so, I'm doing 400. And then you hear this voice in the background saying, this is Speedbird. I'm at 4,000.
we worked some of those Speedbirds. Yeah. But you know they had to slow down whenever coming across the states, coming across Florida.
Right.
They had to get low and slow and then take off again after they cleared us.
Well, everybody's heard my joke before about that. And I'm going to tell you, Reg, because you've not heard it, but I took off out of Boston one time, and I was climbing up going to Miami in a 757, and Boston Center says, hey, Eastern, if you look off your right, you'll see the Kankakee. And I looked at my co-pilot, and I said, what's a Kankakee? And he looked over, and he says, I don't know. I've never heard of a Kankakee. And we came back, and he asked, well, hey, Boston, what's a Kankakee? He said, the Kankakee. Look above you. You'll see the Kankakee. The Concorde. That's the best he could do.
Okay.
Dorothy, that was for you, Dorothy.
Are you telling me that's the Boston accent? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the Kankakee.
That's an accent.
Between Dorothy and Jim, I'm getting used to it now. The thing of it is, I used to talk like that, but I moved when I was about 8 years old, so I kind of lost it.
I don't know. Jim, you've lost your accent, I believe, Jim Hart.
You mean my main accent?
Your main accent?
You don't.
I used to say, hey, now I say yes.
Hey,
And, you know, we used to park the car in the barn.
Well, I parked my car into the garage.
You remember the drinking fountains that they used to call a bubbler?
No.
A tumbler, Yep.
The bubbler?
The bubbler, no.
The bubbler was the fountain.
And we used to call soda the tonic.
Oh, yeah. One that I always remembered, and that's the one that says, I had to laugh to see the cough go down the path a mile and a half to take a bath. And now we say, of course, I had to laugh to see the calf go down the path a mile and a half to take a bath.
Hey, Reggie, is that what you're about to join up with?
I see that.
Area code 678. Who's that area code 678?
That's Bob Furman.
Hey, Bob Furman, I saw that pop up on my screen. You've been listening to this nonsense very long?
Oh, yeah, it's been bringing back a lot of nostalgia. I really enjoy it. I like to hear the airplane talk.
Okay. Well, what kind of airplanes did you fly, Bob? This Bob Furman from Atlanta.
I flew the T-37 in the Air Force, the T-38, C-141, Boeing 727, DC-9, A-300, and great YS-11 Air Nippon when I made captain at Airborne Express in 5 days and never sat in the right seat. And that was probably the best airplane I ever flew, 10,000 and below in all the bad weather.
Okay.
A lot of fun.
Very
big turboprop. You know, slapping ice up along the side of the fuselage, you've been in those.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Bobby, is that a P-38?
Well, there was a T-38 in the Air Force, but this was the YS-11 made by Air Nippon. It had Rolls-Royce turboprop engines on it.
Ah. No, I was thinking of the P for Peter 38.
No, not the P-38. Boy, that would have been fun to fly.
Yeah.
Better believe it.
P-38,
that was...
It's the little white planes that NASA flies around.
Hey, how many of you guys knew Tice Harden? Did a lot of you know Tice Harden?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tice was a gentleman. Wow, what a wonderful man he was. Yeah.
Oh, what a wonderful gentleman. And for all of our listeners that might not be familiar with Eastern, he was Martin's wingman. He was the wingman for the Memphis Belle. For many missions.
Wow.
What a great man to know, Tice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was a great, brave. He was 140 pounds soaking wet probably when he was 23, and what a great hero.
Yeah, and he had a super memory power too. You remember?
How he
could remember a person's name and telephone number and age and everything else. You just tell him that, and he'd remember forever.
Well, I sat with him in Lou Rabbit's prayer group. You know Lou and D. Rabbit. Captain
sure.
Rabbit's had that prayer group going for 30, 40 years, and I've been in it about 16 years, and I was with Tice probably for about 14 years sitting at that big wisdom table in Lou Rabbit's house. What a privilege.
Yeah. Tice passed away several years ago, didn't he, Bob? How long?
Two years ago.
He's
buried up at the Georgia National Cemetery. He got full military honors. But,
okay.
You know, getting back to talking, he was B-17s, and when I was about 2 feet high when you guys were flying those things, that was my big dream. Used to watch Air Power on TV with Walter Cronkite and all the B-17 stories. So.
Okay.
Yes,
Jim Hart.
I don't know if you remember that I have been involved to the Florida chapter of the 8th Air Force Historical Society since the year 2000. And I met some fantastic people. And do you know that two of our members, do you remember that movie with Steve McQueen, The Great Escape?
Right,
Remember he was on a motorcycle?
Yeah, that was his motorcycle.
In a German prison camp.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Did you know that two of the men in our 8th Air Force group were digging the tunnel out of that Stalag 17?
Oh,
and
wow.
I'll tell you, we have just had another reunion. Actually, it was a reunion luncheon. And we had 34 guys still there. When I took over as president in the year 2000, we had 550 members here in Florida. We're down now to 160.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Of course, the 8th Air Force, you know, lost more men and more airplanes than any other military service in World War II. And we had... In this reunion we had this last week, we had one man who was a B-47 pilot. Now, the B-47 was a dive bomber. And you might remember the Battle of the Bulge. They're having a big reunion in a couple of weeks of the people in the Battle of the Bulge. And my friend was a P-47 was diving after the Germans during the Battle of the Bulge. They're going to have something to talk about, I would think.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I want to, before we run out of time, I want Don Gagnon to pay tribute to a gentleman that he emailed me. I think it was you, Don, that you sent me an email of a World War II hero that just passed away, a fighter pilot, just passed away. I think he was 92 years old. And would you tell us a little bit about that, Don?
I'm sorry, Neil. Who I don't know.
I don't know
well,
who you mean.
No, well, maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was someone else because
I don't. No, I don't think.
I thought it was you, but the gentleman that passed away, I can't think. But I think his last name was Lee, L-E-E. But he was the fighter pilot that was having a dogfight over Paris and flew beneath the Eiffel Tower. The only man ever flew his airplane.
Was on the internet about that fighter pilot who went through the Eiffel Tower when he was flying. It was and he just passed away. Passed away actually about 6 months ago. But it was a great article that was on that.
Last name right? It was Lee, wasn't it?
I thought it was Hoover. Bob Hoover.
No, it wasn't Bob Hoover. No, this was another chap, American pilot. P-51, too, I believe. Yep. And he was, he was in a Spitfire. I'm not sure, because I think we flew some Spitfires over there, too. Some of our people, but at any rate, it was a good story, and I didn't keep the article, but I thought it was Don that you. It came from your house, anyhow, Don.
Yeah, it was me that actually sent it. It might have gone out under Don's email address, and I didn't notice the change on it. But it was a nice article that I thought you might want to talk about. I'm trying to find it. I don't have it here in front of me to. Go in and say what it was about that.
Well, been a great discussion tonight. Just a general chat with our Eastern people, and it's always good to have Eastern talk and talked a little bit about that and this, that, and the other. And I appreciate all joining us tonight. Nothing planned, just something that I didn't have enough time to really prepare it for a show, being away for the weekend, and I'll have to do it a little bit earlier this time if I go out of town again.
You know, you and Emery are the first two guys to land at the Boynton Beach Municipal Airport.
Yeah, folks, when we call for the gate code, the controller there was none other than Don, and he gave us clearance to taxi or to land there in the subdivision.
Yeah, 121.7.
That's right. That's ground control. But I look forward to having Reg you with us. Perhaps next week we'll see what I can do during the week and come up with a little program that we can present based on what you have experienced and what I have read about and know about. And then we'll talk about it again next week and see if we can come up with an interesting discussion, which I think we will have because of the subject.
Neil, the week after that. I guess my youngest is 45th birthday, I think it is, and my youngest baby, so we'll, yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. That'll give us extra time to prepare a show based on that. And of course,
you'll
I'll
have to do all the brain work there.
Yeah, well, we've had some fun with our shows. I hope you've listened to a couple of them, especially our Bermuda Triangle show. That was.
I did hear that one. Yeah, that was interesting there. Yeah. I heard
stretching
Howard
the imagination. But it was really a Twilight Zone type of show that we had.
And that sparked some conversation between me and you last week, or well, I guess it was last week. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty much our conversation. But it'll be interesting to share with our listeners. So we'll have fun with that.
All right, Neil.
Let's see. I want to let Jim Hart see if we can get the airplane down on the ground, Jim.
Yeah, come pick me up.
Yeah, I was waiting for the sound of the landing.
Well, no, you hear this
Steve.
Song first.
Yeah, you got Steve.
Now you got to go through Steve. He's the captain of the airplane.
Miami Tower.
Land yet?
Miami Tower, this is Eastern 294. We're just crossing Miami Beach shoreline about 10 out. And we'd like a straight into runway 28 right.
Eastern flight 294, this is Miami Tower. You're clear straight in to land on runway 28 right. Winds are light and variable from the west at 10 miles an hour. And the present temperature at the airport is 82 degrees.
Roger, Miami Eastern 294 is clear to land on 28 right. Thank you.
Well, Jim Hart, it's up to you now.
There's our favorite sound. Great landing, Captain Steve. We had a great show tonight, folks. Mr. Producer, another outstanding job at the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we work and the stories like Vicki Howells recently shared on our radio broadcast here tonight. You know, folks, we feel we truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, our listeners, guests, hosts, and our sponsor, REPA. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us next week as we broadcast our 295th show, traveling aboard our EAL radio show, Boeing 737-800. We hope you'll be with us once again as we file our flight plan for a destination not yet to be determined. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern.
Good night, we love you, Eastern.
Good night.
And we love you.
We love you.